Anya Creed stood before a 10-foot-high loaf-shaped plastic bubble. The translucent structure told her that some structure had recently been demolished here, hard by the waterfront in the old Greek quarter of Alexandria, Egypt. Big, grimy warehouses and blocks of shops with cracked stucco fronts crowded together on all sides. Although the city was a major tourist destination, the stink of buses and trucks through the narrow streets suggested little of charm and less of antiquity. Still, Anya's heart thumped in her throat with anticipation. Beside her stood the handsome young Egyptian archaeologist designated as her escort. Dr. Ismail Al-Maghrabi had a narrow, dark hawk's face and flashing eyes. His white lab smock hung from wide shoulders and flapped around the backs of his long, skinny legs in the sea breeze snaking around the close-set buildings. The two picked their way gingerly across the small lot of churned-up dust with chunks of yellow brick rubble in it, glad for the durability of their hiking boots.
I thought Julius Caesar burned down the Great Library.
He did, Miss Creed, among others.
Call me Anya, please.
Only if you will call me Ismail.
If you say so.
The Great Library was very extensive indeed, with parts scattered across the Greek quarter. As you probably know, in 2004, a team of Egyptian and Polish archaeologists uncovered a series of what appear to be lecture halls a few blocks from here.
I read about it on the BBC website at the time. A very exciting development.
Indeed. The library was a most remarkable facility, as impressive a university and research center as any other in history. Along with the famous book collections and, of course, reading rooms and auditoria, it offered dormitories for its visitors, lush gardens, even gymnasia with swimming pools.
Really? I had no idea.
Al-Maghrabi stopped to open the latch to a door in a wooden frame set into the inflated tent, then opened the door for Anya. The interior seemed gloomy after the brilliant daylight, and she paused to let her eyes adjust as he resecured the door. There was little to see but a hole cut into the ground.
The envelope is for climate control. Positive air pressure allows us to keep humidity and pollution at bay. Our treasures are probably not exceptionally vulnerable to such influences, considering their condition, but why take the chances?
You seem to enjoy some pretty enviable resources here, if you don't mind my saying so, Ismail.
Not at all. Our discoveries here have attracted worldwide attention, which in turn helps to secure the resources to develop and conserve them properly. For that, I believe we have to thank the Internet and, of course, your own television network, which provides a share of our funding.
Yes, I am thrilled they allowed me to come here. I'm told the scrolls contain revelations about the lost civilization of Atlantis.
Come with me. I trust you don't mind a certain amount of sliding into holes in the ground.
I am a real archaeologist, Ismail. I don't just play one on TV.
A slanting tunnel about 3 feet wide and 5 feet high had been dug down to a subterranean chamber a dozen feet below ground level. Hunched over, Anya and Al-Maghrabi followed thick yellow electrical cords down the shallow ramp.
As you no doubt know, the library is believed to have been built early in the 3rd century BC by Ptolemy II, around the temple to the Muses built by his father, the first Ptolemy.
That's called the Museion, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. The word comes from the same origin as the English word museum. It was said that Ptolemy III decreed that all travelers arriving in Alexandria had to surrender any books or scrolls in their possession to be copied by official scribes before they were allowed to proceed. While we don't know for certain if that's true, the library's collection swiftly grew to be the greatest in the Mediterranean world.
They reached a level floor of stone polished smooth by many feet over many years. Banks of yellow floodlights lit a chamber 10 by 20 feet. The air was cool and smelled of soil and mildew. Three people were crowded inside the close quarters. A man and a woman were hunched forward on their hands and knees, rooting in what appeared to be some kind of lumpy mound. They wore knee pads to protect their knees during what must have been long hours of work pressed on the hard floor. The third worker, a man, was bent over a modern table to the side of the chamber. He was a tall, pot-bellied young man with crew-cut blonde hair and an almost invisible goatee on the uppermost of his several chins. He straightened out and turned toward them, beaming. Anya knew at once he was an archaeologist. He looked soft and pale overall, but his hand was calloused and cracked like a stonemason's, from digging, lifting, and the painstaking work of chipping artifacts from a stony matrix with a dentist's steel pick. The man held out a massive hand.
Greetings! You must be on your Creed.
This is Dr. Shchepan Pilatovsky. He's our expert in extracting the scroll safely from the ground.
Oh, we do all that we can do, and Lord knows there is much to be done here.
And this is Alimansur and Maria Fradima.
The man and woman turned around and picked themselves up from the floor. Both were thin and dark, and Anya took them for Egyptians. Ali bobbed his head and grinned shyly, and the woman stuck out her hand. She wore her black hair in a bun and had a bright bird-like air to her. The archaeologists seemed glad for the break, and Anya could understand why. Even if they loved their work, as she did, it could be brutally arduous, and any stop in work was welcome.
Please, call me Maria.
Anya.
This was a library storeroom. Most of the scrolls were kept in locked cabinets in chambers such as this. Only the most popular items, or those specifically requested by scholars, were stored in the reading rooms.
So that heap of rubble over there...
The remains of a cabinet. Damaged by the fire, it collapsed and mostly decomposed, leaving the burned scrolls behind.
How many scrolls did the library possess? Does anyone really know?
Not precisely. Some have hypothesized it held as few as 40,000 scrolls. Others suggest the founding Ptolemy set a goal of 500,000. On the basis of what we have found, we feel confident conjecturing the former limit is far too low.
I must confess this isn't my time period, but I can certainly see how the recovery of any number of scrolls at all from the ancient world is a terrific thing, regardless of the number.
Oh, yes!
And here, Miss Creed, you can see three of them.
Pilatovsky's vast, calloused paw swept dramatically toward the table, where a small amount of what appeared to be rubble lay piled on a sheet of white plastic. The scrolls looked like forearm-sized chunks of wood fished out of a campfire. Anya's heart started to race. She'd seen older artifacts throughout the course of her career, but there was something about these scrolls. The thrill of something lost for 2,000 years and at one time believed to be indecipherable, even if found. Modern technology held the key to restoring the contents of these lumps of char to the world.
These are actual volumes from the library?
Yes, yes. My friends and I extracted them this morning.
Even if they're just grocery lists, this is still so exciting. So who really burnt the library anyway, Ismail? Was it Julius Caesar?
Caesar was one of the culprits.
One of them?
He was indeed, and not the first. The first major fire damage occurred around 88 BC, when much of Alexandria burned down during civil disorders. Then, during the Roman Civil Wars in 47 BC, Julius Caesar chased his rival Pompey into the city. When Egyptian forces attacked him, Caesar set fire to the dockyards and the Egyptian fleet. The fire probably spread through trade goods piled on the docks, waiting to be loaded on ships. The library lay near the waterfront like now. Many scrolls were lost in the conflagration. Anything that was left was stolen by Roman soldiers and sent back to Rome.
But that wasn't the end of the library?
No. In 273, the Romans made war upon the Palmyrene queen Zenobia. Emperor Aurelian burned the Greek quarter, the library included. That destroyed most of what was left.
So what happened to the rest that the fire didn't destroy it?
Time. Eventually, Egypt's rulers lost interest in maintaining the library. Much of it simply fell into disuse. Here, as elsewhere, people reused the scrolls or even burned them for fuel. Many simply rotted away in the heat and humidity. The only ones that were spared were the ones protected by a thick coating of carbonization.
Al-Maghrabi's headquarters appeared to have spent much of its career as a warehouse, with high walls of yellowish brick, steel struts for rafters, and grimy skylights admitting brownish morning light. It smelled more than slightly of fish from its proximity to the waterfront.
Well, you know, Anya, we can make no claims concerning the veracity of the scrolls. We only recover them, and are thrilled to do it, if I may say so.
You should be. It's just that Atlantis is a hot button for archaeologists in the U.S., Ismail.
It is for all of us. We are, after all, on a quest for the truth, are we not?
Of course.
And should we not follow the truth wherever it might lead us?
All right. I see where you're headed with this, Ismail. And you're right. If I'm going to be a serious scientist, then evidence needs to outweigh my preconceptions.
Al-Maghrabi led Anya down an aisle towards a wooden door. Turning the knob, he ushered her inside a wide room, well lit by banks of standing lights. Several people worked at a row of computers. Others examined blackened, log-like scrolls on a big table. Ismail led Anya toward a table. On it stood a curious device, like a bundle of upright rods, working through one of the burned scrolls. The two technicians operating it had teased out several inches of a scroll. It resembled charred bark being peeled from a log. They paused to smile and nod at Anya and Ismail.
You might find this interesting, Anya. It's based on a machine invented in the 18th century to unroll burned papyri. We mostly make use of magnetic resonance imaging to take pictures of the scrolls, layer by layer, without unrolling them. But we explore every means of recovering their content. And over here, we have our apparatus for photographing fragments of broken scrolls we find.
Ismail turned to a wide white table with bright white underlighting, illuminating the faces of the Egyptian-looking man and European-looking woman bending over it.
Ali, Shashapan, Maria, come quickly!
Everyone in the room stiffened as others began to arrive on the run from the other cubicles. Apparently, the bell tolled to let everyone in the converted warehouse know there was news. Everyone crowded before a large flat-screen monitor as an image appeared. It was a ragged, off-white oblong with spidery dark gray markings on it that Anya guessed might be ancient Greek. A young woman sat perched on a stool by the photographic table at the other end from the bulky camera itself, which was mounted on a heavy mobile stand. Now she pushed off and came sauntering over. She was strikingly pretty, with pale blonde hair done in pigtails that made her round-cheeked face look even younger than it probably was. Anya fought down an inclination to hate her. As she approached the flat-screen monitor, Anya felt uneasy. China doll perfect the young woman's appearance may have been, but she gave a strong impression of negativity. Excited as they were, the other team members moved back from the screens as the young woman leaned in, jaw working on a wad of gum. She stuck her finger towards the scroll's faded scribblings projected on the screen. The man at the keyboard seemed to wind up tighter and tighter the closer her black-painted fingernail got.
Yaja, please, do not touch the computer. Please, remember the last time.
Let me see here. They had in their possession most marvelous gemstones, such as rubies or emeralds, but the size of goose eggs, wherein they stored a force as potent as the lightning. Perhaps this blasphemy, this stealing of the very thunder of mighty Zeus, evoked his wrath and caused him to cast down that which belonged by right to Poseidon. That's it for this page. The break was a physical one, nothing to translate.
Can she really just read it like that?
Oh, yes, she can. This is the noted Yajar Arkadzic. She holds degrees in cryptology and linguistics. She has a remarkable gift for languages. She is quite simply beyond genius.
Everyone stood solemnly and looked around. Some of their eyes were wide with amazement at Yaja's amazing talent. Anya studied the young woman, who seemed content to stand looking offhandedly at the screen, soaking up the arm's-length adulation of her comrades. Anya had her own gift for languages, which formed a key part of her love for travel and adventure. Even still, she had to be impressed. Yaja turned and looked at the visitor for the first time, and her blue eyes flew wide.
I know you! I have seen you on Chasing History's Monsters!
Well, yes, I appear on the show from time to time.
You are the woman they bring on when they wish to cover something up and undo all the good work done by poor Christy Chatham.